Succession number 24623, Reel 7.
Sergeant Newman, Reel 5. I think you were saying that you were living off the land, that you took whatever...
Whatever you could find. Cats, dogs, anything that was going. I mean, you could conceal what was happening with 1,500 men on the road together. But I had a wonderful 60 men who still respected my rank. So I said to them that when we go, when we get on the road, we'll march. We won't slope along any old hour because it's never ending. The journey's never ending if you do that. So we did a nice march, left, right, and this went on for days and days and days. And the only time that we ever slumped about was when we were stopped at night. But for that, all them hundreds of miles as we went, we never walked properly once, we marched. All 60 men of us.
What did happen when you were overnight then? How did they arrange things for overnight stops? What happened overnight?
Oh, they picked farmhouses and they packed us in farmhouses, outbuildings, lofts, and then put a ring of guards around. So you couldn't sleep. They had no beds, you couldn't sleep or anything, but at least they could control you.
Yeah.
You see. And then, of course, we went on the march the next morning. Of course, we had a lot of Sikh. The Sikh was shot. There was no hesitation there. So there was men trying to carry men, the pals, and they became Sikh. They fell by the wayside and the guards shot them and left them where they were. Couldn't cope with them, you see. I don't know how long it took us. Many, many weeks, I know. And lots of things happened on that trip. I mean, people were going mad with hunger. Thirst wasn't too bad because there were a lot of mountain streams. They were eating anything they could get hold of. I didn't do too bad. I swapped my shirt to a farmer for a bag of oats, which once a day we used to grind them up between two stones, mix a drop of water with them and then squeeze the water out and then make a fire and roast them on top. All on us suffered with indigestion. But you had a bit of something in your stomach, you see. And then again, you perhaps won't know this, but once you get over there is a limit to hunger pangs. Once you get over that, food don't mean anything anymore to you. You just don't bother with food. It's just the first weeks and weeks with no food and the hunger pangs which drives you up the pole, and then suddenly you're not hungry anymore because your stomach's contracted, so you don't need it. So, and that is a true saying. I suffer with contracted stomach even today. I eat little and often. I do. And eventually we arrived at Wolfsburg.
How did you get there? Did you walk all the way?
All the way.
Yeah.
All the way. And that was rather a large camp. And the overflow from that was Judenberg. Dew Mountain. Translated into English.
Were these properly organised camps?
Well, we organised ourselves. Yeah. We had our own elections. We had Labour, Conservative and Liberal. The Germans didn't do anything to interfere with us. We had a certain amount of food from them. The Red Cross managed to get in touch with us, and we had some Red Cross parcels, not many. And then we had working parties going out who could salvage outside nettles and anything edible outside. So, and that all went into the community cookhouse. They used to supply us with dirty, rotten pig tates, pig potatoes and all that. And so we, by getting organised on the basis of Liberal, Conservative and Labour, whoever got into power had to draw the lines, the rules and regulations, which worked wonderfully well. It didn't help the food situation at all, but it discipline, it helps discipline.
What was the accommodation in these camps?
Wooden huts.
Wooden huts.
Just normal, big old long wooden huts with bunk beds, 3 high there was. Had a few bedboards, and I went up 3 high and had bedboards, and for a short while. Of course, they never supplied any fuel. We had an old stove in there, and slow but surely, the bedboards disappeared in the fire. Oh. Or if it was cold. So every night when you went to bed, if you was up 2 stories, you lifted your blanket up to make sure you'd got a bedboard there. Otherwise, you went straight. There was a cold water supply. Of course, you want to remember now that we had nothing. We hadn't got such a thing as a razor, toilets of any, toiletry of any description. When you're captured, you haven't got it. So you had beards hanging down here, or if you found somebody with a knife, he could cut it short, or whatever. You were filthy. You was. The only water supply we had was a one tap, and that was 3,500 in my camp. So you can imagine, one tap of water, 3,500 men. The toilets was a great big trench, which we had to dig ourselves, put a pine pole across it, on legs, and you just sat on the pine pole, and filled the trench up, and when that was filled up, you filled it in and dug another one, and so on, so on. Yeah. And I was in there for quite a while. I forgot to tell you that at the time I was captured, this German soldier struck me in the face with his butt of his Tommy gun, and he knocked all my teeth out, all the way around there. So when I landed up in the camp, there's a lot of stuff I couldn't eat, because I had one tooth here and 2 there, and that interfered with me chewing. I couldn't chew, you see. And when I got to Wolfsburg, after I'd been there a while, I went to see the doctor. He was a German doctor and an English doctor. And I told him what my problem was, and he said, "Hey, them teeth out, you see." And they were here and the other one. I said, "Where can I go?" And I said, "A hut, number hut, so and so," which I thought was a dental hut. When I got down there, there's 3 Australians with a chair in there. And I told them what I wanted. I said, "Oh, go on, boy, sit down." And I sat in this chair, and the bloke went behind me, put his hand on, pulled my head back. This other one produced a pair of ordinary electrician's pliers. Took all 3 teeth out. Ah, just like that. Oh, cross with the head. But I got suppose I could eat a little bit better. But now my wanderlust turned up again. I thought to myself, now I don't know how long this war's going to last.
Were you able to get any news of the war from inside the camp?
Hmm?
When you were in the camp, were you able to get any news of what was going on?
Oh, we had secret radios.
Oh.
That's one thing that prisoners of war can always get. Where they get them from, nobody knows. And the Germans didn't. They used to raid the camp, take the huts to pieces, but they never found them. So they used to disperse them between each prisoner, one little bit between each prisoner, you see. So I decided that I'd volunteer. Oh, well, after a while, my friend from Gunnerby, who was still with me, he volunteered to go on a working party. He said, "If I can get any extra food, mate," he said, "I'll bring you a bit back." And when he come back at night, he had got managed to get hold of something on a farm job. And he said, it's not bad. He said, you could be surprised what you can get off the farms. Now, being a sergeant, I wasn't forced to work. Below the rank of a sergeant, you had to work at something. So I volunteered one morning. And they took us down to the railway station, packed us in these old cattle trucks, the same as you see going up to the crematoriums. And I noticed that every so often the train stopped, and I could hear this poor German voice, Raus, Raus, Raus. They was emptying the trucks, you see, and I got a bit worried about this. I didn't know what kind of was happening, whether they was eliminating about each truck or what. But after I got near the door, I thought, well, I've got to take a chance. And when the time came for our truck to be emptied, I was the first one out. And there was an old wood-burning gas lorry there. I bet you've never seen one of them. They burn pine wood, and the gas coming off on it drives the engine. I'd never seen one before. But they were quite common in Austria during the war. And some old farmers sitting in there. And I've jumped a load here. Yes. I've jumped the journey to Salonika.
Yes.
Didn't I?
When you said you were walking.
Yeah. Well, we walked to Salonika. And there, they put us in a camp there. On the Aegean Sea. Right on the edge of the Aegean Sea. Yes, I must tell you this bit. And that was a terrible camp. There were thousands of us in there. But the food wasn't too bad, I suppose. It was all horse meat, dead horses and all that sort of stuff. Well, then suddenly they called us out, so many of us, and they put us in a... again, in these cattle trucks at the railway station, gave us one tin of meat and a quarter of the black bread, a round loaf of black bread. Shut the doors, there was only 52 men to a truck, just a little window like that. Shut the doors and locked them and sent us on a journey. We didn't know where we was going. The heat was unbearable. People were dying inside the trucks. We were using them as pillars because you cram 52 men in a place like that. And so we were having to use them as pillars as they died. The first stop was at Belgrade, in Yugoslavia. And they let us out for half an hour. There was a well there where you had to pull the water up with a rope. We was allowed a half an hour to drink as much as we liked, throw it at one another if we liked, have a wash. But we weren't allowed to remove the dead out of the trucks. And they loaded us back in again. And the next stop, no food this time. 2 days later, we pulled into a place called Mark Pongo.
Where's that?
MCPANGUE. QUE. Now, where it is, it's somewhere in Austria, I assume. It is. And they put us in there. Well, there they deloused us. And they allowed us to clear the dead bodies out of the trucks and give them a decent burial. I must tell you one small is because the British soldier, he's up to every trick under the sun. While we was travelling from Salonika to Belgrade, in these trucks, a guard was sitting on the top of the truck, covering the next truck with his Tommy gun. See if anybody broke out somehow or other, you see. Of course, there was a lot of dysentery in the truck, so some of the lads had a brilliant idea, because if they looked through the window sideways, they could see this guard sitting on the next truck, you see. So they used to get all this dysentery in one of their old tin hats with a nice wind blowing when the train was travelling, and they used to dump it out of the window and as soon as no more men sitting on the trucks after that, they were light. But that was a good one, that was, yeah. Well, they got us to Mark Pongo. There they deloused us, because the only thing that'll kill lice is dry heat. They have a special unit. Strip off for 2 or 3 days, put your clothes through there, wander around the camp naked, all of you. And then they give you your clothes back in, you see. And then we went to Wolfsburg with it. I'm caught up with it now.
When you were on that journey from Corinth all the way through...
Oh, yes, I was on that.
Yeah, did anyone try and get away and escape?
Well, where could you escape over? It's a funny thing you said that. Because I had a laddo with me from London, Douglas England. And he was as mad as me, you know. He was a rebellious little sod, he was. And he was always coming up with some brilliant ideas. And while we were wending away up the mountains, because the guards was about every 100 feet, 100 metres, you know, each side of it, he said to me, he said, because it's all fern, you know, the fern grows on the mountain. He said, as soon as we get to a bend, and that guard's gone round, and this one's coming up, he said, we'll slip out, dive in the fern, and lay low, which we did. And it worked. After they'd gone by, we wandered across the mountains, and we came across a little old hamlet, Austrian hamlet, and there were two sisters. Of course, they were frightened to death when they saw us, but it was all right. And of course, my German was beginning to improve a bit then. Told him who we was. I was honest about it. But we needed food and water and shelter. No problem. They even killed two chickens. And they gave us a raw, ripe feed. But we couldn't stop, because if the Germans had missed us and found us, they would have shot them. So we didn't want that to happen. So the next day they packed us a load of food up. Now we're left behind, but the column is wending its way down the mountains. Yeah. And we could see the column, so we managed to go straight down, climbing down there on the sides, in the back and everything, waiting for the column to come by, and then just filtered back in again, and they never knew we'd gone. Because you couldn't stay away. It was just a matter of, you know, getting back in the column, and we'd had a good meal. We'd still got a bit of group with us, so, yeah.
But I was just wondering if anyone, while you were in Greece, anyone might have had the idea of getting away.
Oh, plenty of them got away.
With the Greeks?
Yes, plenty of them got away. Mm. But it was in an awkward position there. The Greeks were very helpful, but where do you go? You've got the sea all round you, more or less, haven't you? If you were in southern Greece, you've got the sea around you, haven't you? You have. So it's only where it goes up through the Adriatic, yes, through the Aegean Sea, and then up there you've got Bulgaria and Yugoslavia and Italy and all that places. But if you're down below, that means you've got to go all that distance back up again if you could do it. So the chances were very small, but it did happen. Now, where did I get to that time? We've got to Mark Pongo, haven't we?
Yeah.
Well, from there, it was from Mark Pongo, where I volunteered for work on the farm. I got to work on the farm. But then I got ill, and I landed up in Graz Hospital. G-R-A-Z-Z-E or something. I was very ill. I got...
What did you got?
Poisoning. Blood poisoning. But they did a job on me. Took me about a month to clear me. So now they transferred me back to Wolfsburg, which was the other side of Austria, the top end. So I decided that I wasn't having that. I was going to volunteer for work again. So I volunteered for work again, and this time I got on a farm again. Now that wasn't bad.
Where was the farm?
Gersdorf, a place called Gersdorf, There was only 16 of us in the village.
What sort of work were you doing there?
Farm work. My old usual farm work. But there was food in it. You see, although they weren't supposed to feed you, only a certain amount. I mean, they, some of our farmers, it was like your father, you know, it was a family.
Who are you working for? Are you working for one family all the time, or where you moved around?
Yes, you just worked for one farmer. Mm. They usually had just one prisoner per farm. And I was dead looking. Well, I was unlucky the first time. I got a Nazi I got in trouble with, and then my second farmer was a bloke called Sinclair. And he was a pro-British farmer. He loved the English, so I was okay there. Mm.
What about the first one, the Nazi? How did you get
rid of him?
How did you get into trouble with him, you said?
Well, he would talk politics.
Oh, I see.
And they're not supposed to. But when I retaliated, because I used to have my main meal in the farmhouse, and then being a chief of police and a Ortsbahnführer, all the old farmers had to come to him for advice, what they could do, what they could sell, what they couldn't. And they always came at lunchtime. And so it was a constant flow of Hail Hitler and stating his case, and Hail Hitler to go out again, and then Hail Hitler coming back in again. I got fed up with it one day, and I jumped up and I said, Hail Churchill! Of course, that didn't go down very well, you see. And he cut my meal out. I was on more or less bread and water.
Were you living on the farm?
Hmm?
Were you living on the farm?
Well, we was eating on it. I was living in the schoolhouse.
Ah. Were you under guard in the schoolhouse? Were you under guard in the schoolhouse?
They turned it into a miniature camp. Barbed wire at the windows, bars at the windows. Mm. Closed it down from school, you know, and all that. And I went in for lunch. And she gave me some rye bread and some cider. And I said, where's the hot meal, you know? Mm. And she said that I'd been barred. I wasn't getting it. So I said, where is he? He's barred me, you see. So I went looking for him and asked him what it was all about. And he got rather nasty with me, so I belted him. And then I took off and went back to the camp, went back to the schoolhouse, and put myself under the protection of the guard. Because he was responsible, once I got in that schoolhouse, he was responsible. Because this horse bound for you, he was going to shoot me. Kept a revolver in the house, you see. So then a court of inquiry went off about it, and a couple of three officers came out from Pieseldorf, and they decided that there was a 50-50 blame on both sides, and that I would go back and work for him. And I said no, because I didn't have to work, I'd be a sergeant, you see. I said, I'll take another job, another farmer, but I'm not working for him anymore. And they agreed, and they gave me this Sinclair bloke, took me off here, this bloke. But we soon made friends again with him, and in fact he was one of our best friends afterwards. But I never went back to work for him. Mm.
And
then,
And how did Sinclair treat you?
Hmm?
How did Sinclair treat you?
How did you treat me?
Sinclair.
Oh, I was like a son to him. He used to call me his son, morning son. He did, and he gave me all the easy jobs. Oh, he would have done if I'd accepted them. Never overworked me. If I got tired in midday and laid down and shut my eyes, he would never wake me up until I was ready to get up. Oh, I had the best of everything for while they were there. And he even had a nice daughter as well. Very nice. I taught her English, she taught me German. She used to pick me up on Sunday mornings and take me to church. I got permission from headquarters that the lads could go to Pieseldorf to attend church at Pieseldorf.
What kind of church is that? Was that a Catholic church?
It's Catholic, yeah. It is. And after a lot of argument, he allowed us. But the farmer had to come and sign you out, take you with him and bring you back again. So Peter, I didn't want to go to church because I'm not a religious man, but it was handy because there was a guest house, a pub outside the church. So I could go, she'd take me there and then she'd go in church and I'd nip in the pub. And then when she'd come out of church, she'd pick me up from the pub. And that worked very well. And, actually, yeah, very well. Well, then things began to go wrong. Of course, war was now coming to an end, as you might as well say. And I had an illegal radio. Well, I didn't have it. There was an illegal radio in the old farmer's house. Oh, I missed that one out. There was a... We got notification that he was receiving a visitor for a short stay leave. And he was a German Nazi officer. And old Sinclair, he knew what I was like. I mean, I'd annoy a Nazi just like that, you know. So he begged me not to say anything wrong. I said, okay, I won't say anything wrong. Well, out there they have what is known as Schnapsbrennen. You know German schnapps? Mm. They tried it.
Yes, indeed.
I've got two bottles of it. And they brew it on the farms. Mm. And this apparatus travels from farm to farm.
The alembic still.
Yeah, it's called Brennen, burning. Mm. Apples, pears, whatever you're using, you see. Plums, whatever you've got there, you see. And I was an expert at brewing that. Of course, the old farmer, he was in the home guard, so it was only me that could do it. So Douglas, I told you this, Douglas England, my mate, was in the next farm. So he helped me. And then when the apparatus went to his farm, I went over there and helped him to do it, you see. And this here German officer was turning up, you see, and they begged me not to do anything out of the ordinary or upset him or, you know. That was about 3 o'clock in the morning, because you burn 24 hours a day. And the farmer has to get permission, that's a signed permission, to keep you there for 24 hours. And me and Doug's there, we were nice and happy, we had a few. We was brewing it once and then brewing a drop extra for another strength, and then we tried it and another strength, it blew the top of your head off. So we had quite a drop. At 3 o'clock in the morning, this officer come down the steps of the cellar where we was burning. Typical German officer, immaculate in all senses. Greeted us, shook hands with us, asked us what the snaps was like. But we'd already got so much of this third brew there. So naturally we offered him that. Oh, we thought it beautiful. Oh, we had to carry him out and carry him back to the house at 4 or 5 o'clock next morning. He was drunk as a lord, he couldn't stand up. And I found out that he wasn't a Nazi at all. No. Yeah. Because the last thing he ever said to me, because now the war's drawing to a close. The Russians are in Hungary, Romania, and we're only 27 kilometres from the border into Austria. And we could see the big guns going off, the flashes and booms and all that. And he said to me, I said to him one day, I said, before he went back, I said, what are you going to do when the Russians come? If the Russians come, before you go back again. You know what he said? He said, they got a spare English uniform. I said, not really, why? He said, I'll dress up as an English prisoner. He said, then the Russians won't know any different. But he went back again before that happened. So what happened to him, I've no idea. But he embraced me and shook hands with me when he went. Yeah. All little odd things happen like that.
What sort of farm did Sinclair have? Was it a mixed farm or...?
No, they're self-sufficient.
Yes.
Yeah, they have so many acres. Mm. I think it was about 47 acres.